Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, and welcome to the show. If you've been here before, welcome back. And if you haven't, thanks for stopping by. I hope you dig what we do here. I'm coming to you from snowy Toronto, Ontario, Canada right now. And I hope that it's more pleasant and more beautiful and warm where you are. But who knows? Maybe it's colder. All right. Let's get into today's episode. My guest today, he's an impulsive writer, a family man, and a founder of three companies with two successful exits under his belt. So back in 2007, and while still in college, he co-founded what would become WooCommerce. After 6 years growing the company, he exited to start something new. The following year, he started Convergio. He grew this company and team until August 2019, when the company was acquired by Campaign Monitor. It was through his experience in building Convergio that he stumbled onto this idea of creating a business that could be life and family first. This idea became the foundation for his brand new book called Life Profitability, The New Measure of Entrepreneurial Success. Now, let's hack Addy Pienaar. Just before we get into the interview with Addy, I want to thank today's sponsor, Nexus Managed WordPress Hosting. For the last 5 years, I've been using shared website hosting for HTE, and for the most part, things were pretty all right. But within the last year, some problems had come up, and due to these issues with the servers, the site just kept going down and just being slow as hell. So as you know, your entire business, when it's online, any downtime just is not acceptable. So I started the process of shopping around and looking and trying out every website hosting company that we could come across. Well, 5 months later, we found a new home for HTE, and I've ended up making the full move over to Nexus. Nexus isn't just regular WordPress hosting. They are fully managed WordPress hosting. So Nexus is a platform that ensures your WordPress site is performing at its optimum levels at all times. They also provide you with automatic WordPress and plugin updates to ensure that you're always running the latest version, fast, secure hosting for your website, endless scalability. So if you happen to have something go viral, they won't just cut you off like a lot of other hosting companies will. Plus, my favorite part is they have 24/7, 365 days a week, always on support. In case you need help, they are there to get you up and running and going again. Plus, fitting for today's interview, since Addy is the co-founder of WooCommerce, Nexus also offers managed WooCommerce hosting. So if you're looking to start or scale your e-commerce business, Nexus and WooCommerce can help you. So I don't just recommend Nexus. I absolutely trust them with my website. My entire business depends on fast, secure hosting. And with Nexus and their outstanding support, I couldn't feel more confident. So I reached out to them and asked if they'd give you a deal. And they said yes. So for the next 2 to 3 days till Friday, if you use offer code HACK60, you'll get 60% off your first 2 months. So if you go to hacktheentrepreneur.com/Nexus, and use the promo code that you'll see on the page, you'll get 60% off. Or head over to hacktheentrepreneur.com. If you check out the latest article on the blog, it's called Why We Change Hosting Companies After 5 Years and Where We Host Now. You can read the full review of Nexus, what we think, what they offer, and how we made the decision to move. You can just head over there to the site. But if you want to go straight to the offer, go to hacktheentrepreneur.com/Nexus and make sure to use that offer code HACK60. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very special guest, Addy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
My pleasure. My pleasure. As I just said to you, you were on the show, I think, about 4 or 5 years ago. Well, you were on this show 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know exactly, but you're one of a handful of people who's been back. And so I'm excited for this and I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's for me, it's always kind of great to reappear on a podcast that I've been. It's not happened many times. I think I can count on my one hand. And especially if that there's been such a big gap, because life changes so much between those two kind of your points on our kind of, you know, life journey.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So let's start here. Addy, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what's the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Oh, yeah. I would probably say, John, I don't think I'm the smartest kind of entrepreneur around. I'm also not the hardest worker. In fact, I'm relatively lazy, even though I work a lot of hours. And I think if there's a single thing that for me that it comes down to is just perseverance. And that sounds frivolous to say that. But the reason I say that is throughout kind of both the two successful kind of businesses that I've built, along with all the kind of your failures scattered along the way, many days, like it was hard work, right? Wasn't clear what the path was, didn't know what the answer was, didn't know where to find an answer to overcome certain challenges or reach certain milestones. And it really is just that kind of perseverance, right? And for me, it even comes down to perseverance and like keep asking people for things, right? And keep bugging them. And that, again, that sounds juvenile, but literally like there's so many examples where I think perseverance is that kind of undercurrent and ultimately my superpower. I rarely give up and I have rarely given up, at least in my own entrepreneurial journey.
Wow. I like that. And I like prefacing it by saying that you're not the smartest or hardest worker. I think you've probably outworked a lot of people, but then you've also underworked probably a lot of other people as well, which has brought you to some sort of changes.
Yeah. And I think I would know by no doubt, have no doubts about that, right, John? I mean, my wife would definitely tell you that I work an insane amount of hours. I think the point in that is I really dislike the idea of working just for the sake of working, and especially like working hard, right? Like if I can work smarter and I can work less or I can work more effectively, like that's the kind of notion, because inherently, like I also like to sit around and do nothing at times.
Nice. And so you mentioned your two big successes, you called them, and then there was a bunch of failures. But so the two successes, I mean, the first one was WooThemes, which then went into WooCommerce, right? 2007?
Yep. Yep.
That was, you were still in college, I believe.
Yeah. So I built the first product that led to me meeting Magnus and Mark, who eventually became my co-founders and WooThemes before we went to WooCommerce. And that first product I built in November, just like literally like weeks before I graduated from the University of Stellenbosch.
Wow. So that was 2007. And then you guys built it until, when did you exit WooCommerce?
Yeah. So WooCommerce ultimately sold to Automattic in, I think it was April, May 2015. But the precursor to that is I actually left WooCommerce and sold out at the end of 2013, because I at that stage made the decision that I needed to challenge myself again and I needed to build something from scratch. So I actually sold out in 2013 prior to their exit to Automattic.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. So, I mean, WooCommerce at this point is, I mean, it's success-wise, and I don't know, like, money-wise from all that, but just the fact that that product touches, like, millions of people's businesses at this point must feel pretty good.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the coolest thing for me, John, is looking up the information. And again, it's very hard to tell, right? Because WordPress inherently, and then, you know, WooCommerce on top of that is such a decentralized solution. So getting accurate data in terms of how many WooCommerce merchants there are, what their combined GMV is, all those very sexy statistics that, you know, Shopify, multi-billion dollar kind of market cap at this stage, we can report on. Like, and I look at that and I'm like, I think many people underestimate WooCommerce. And admittedly, a lot of that happened like in the years after I left and after they sold to Automattic, right? But I truly think that we had built a world-class product even way back then. And much of the team, as far as I'm aware, that got kind of moved over to Automattic with acquisition is still there and still in senior kind of leadership roles there. So yes, like that was my long-winded answer to saying, I think being able to say that I was involved in WooCommerce's history to a big extent, like that is something that I have immense pride in.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And it's used by a lot of people and like powers. So, I mean, millions and millions of businesses are literally run on it. I use it daily. So it's pretty cool. And that was 2013. You left your part. And then Conversio, right? Conversio the following year?
Yeah, so Conversio was originally called Receiptful before we rebranded it, 2 years later. And it started with a kind of very simple idea, which was, can we turn an email kind of receipt that you get from when you purchase from any kind of your online vendor, your online merchant, and turn it into a marketing kind of touch point, an interaction? So we started that, founded that in 2014, released the first version November 2014, and then ultimately sold that to Campaign Monitor in August 2019. So about a five and a half year journey from start to finish.
Receiptful. So you were on the show right like a couple of months after Receiptful had started. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I was like, there was a business in there, but that became Conversio. Okay, I got it. And then, so then you sold that one. So the question here is to me, and I know like you've now started a brand new business, and there's also now between these times, there's obviously been some things that haven't worked out. So it's not just like you're like one hit after the other, like home run, home run, home run. But Addy, with somebody who has had some very great successes, and you seem to like start project after project, and like literally like months later or sooner, you start another one after you sell one. How are you deciding like what, when a project is like worth your time, energy, and resources?
Oh, probably impulsively, John. I mean, I think that's that's probably what happened in the past. I think what is true, though, I think two things, right? So after WooThemes, I mentioned leaving because I wanted a new challenge. And I remember that I essentially sat down like in those last couple of months as I negotiated my exit, et cetera. And I wrote down a few things, like criteria or requirements that I wanted to be present in whatever I was going to tackle next. And at that stage, I didn't have a concrete idea. I just had this kind of almost scaffolding that I had kind of created for myself, which said, the idea needs to fit into kind of this framework. And I remember one of the things there that I'd wrote, kind of written down in my notebook was that I wanted to build a team sooner, for example. And what that reference was, I think, Magnus, Mark, and I, as founders of WooThemes, we really rode a wave and we almost, I hate buzzwords, but, kind of blitz scaled the business. And I think building a team and putting those structures in place was only something we had to almost retrofit, right? Because it wasn't a very proactive thing for us because we merely had to kind of, keep growing due to the incredibly fast growth of WooCommerce back then. So like that was like, I had these little kind of points of reference. And fast forward, kind of post-Conversio, I've mostly done the same thing, which is I look back at all the learnings from Conversio and I realize that there are kind of pivotal points where I could have improved certain things. And key for me now, like diving back into SaaS again, is thinking through like, simple thing, like thinking through what does expansion revenue actually look like, right? And acknowledging that a product probably needs to mature to build proper expansion revenue opportunities into the kind of the business model. But when I evaluate an idea, those things need to be kind of present. So there's all of these kind of nodes of reference that I've kind of built up, whether they're preference or actual almost truisms, that I at least feel the kind of any new idea at least needs to tick most of those boxes before I would even consider getting or impulsively start working on them.
Wow. Okay. So it's impulsive, but it's not like it has to fit in this framework or it's just not worth being.
Yeah,
impulsive.
Exactly. So it's probably deep thought procrastination for a while. And then very suddenly it's impulsive.
Right. And so did you have this framework with Receiptful?
I had bits of it, right? I mean, and I think Receiptful was probably much more linear or contained in the sense that the biggest part of me, or like the overarching reason for starting new business at that stage, was all around feeling like I was a one-hit wonder and I wanted to prove that I can create another successful business. So I think to that extent, I don't think my reasoning was that wholesome or that holistic. I think I had a few things that I wanted to improve on. I mean, as I mentioned, like building a team much sooner in the business, which I ultimately ended up doing. But for the rest of it, it was mostly how quickly can I build another business that, at least pays my salary and justifies me working on this full time. So it really was trying to also find that idea that was a shortcut to success versus picking maybe the best, in air quotes, or the biggest idea at that stage.
Okay. And then so the framework developed throughout Receiptful turning into Convergio, and then when you exited that.
So yeah, I think many of those things are very much kind of realizations across the journey where you either make a mistake or you realize that kind of you went down a path and then there's a fork in that road and you pick the wrong path, or you get to a dead end and sometimes you have to turn back and do other things. So for me, like, I think the part of coming up with this framework is all about, like, I absolutely have a thirst for learning and I love a challenge, for example. And those two things, like, if I had to abstract this framework that I apply to ideas, is like the reason for me to build another business kind of, again, appeals to those very fundamental things, very fundamental parts of myself, which is I have to learn new things. I have to challenge myself. I have to build a team. I really want to build kind of your team. So that's the why for the business. The kind of the criteria for the actual idea is slightly kind of separate to that. But it's all, as I don't think it's an experience thing, and it's a, you know, ongoing thing about self-discovery process almost of me getting to know bigger parts of me and how that kind of needs to play out in future ventures and adventures.
I like it. And so 2014, a year or not quite a year, but the following year after leaving WooCommerce, and now 2020, I guess you started Cogsy, I think 4 months ago. So when you started Convergio, like you said, well, it was Receiptful, but I know your ex-rock star moniker that you use, and you said you felt like a one-hit wonder, which is, there's your rock star coming out. And that follow-up album to that first big hit is the one where lots of bands just fail. They don't make it past that. Like, you have your whole life to create this one thing. It's really good. And then all of a sudden you have to follow it up. So you've done that. You did that successfully again. You exited successfully again. Starting Cogsy, are you like way more confident in yourself and like, oh shit, I got this now?
It depends on what side of the bed I wake up on in the morning, John.
All right, fair enough.
I mean, I still think about myself at least, and I don't know how much this feels true for other entrepreneurs. I think almost every year that I survive business and I make progress, I feel more experienced, more equipped, calmer, more confident, all those things. And then there are still some of those days where I wake up and I think to myself, shit, this thing can still fail, right? I can still fail at this. I can make mistakes. I don't know what the answer is, regardless of experience. I don't know where to find the answer, which is, I think, an even worse experience. And then, like, in that mindset, I sometimes go to that point, like, where I remember the scar tissue that, you know, is there from either the obvious abject failures that I had experienced before, or just the really tough times in business, like that time when I had to lay off, you know, kind of team members that I didn't really want to lay off, right? But I had no choice. Or that year where, like, we literally took a screwdriver to every single screw in the business and tried to kind of eke out that 0.1 degree turn, because that's all we had at that stage. And in those moments, I did definitely have a kind of a challenge to my confidence, where it's like, why am I doing this? You know, this doesn't feel great in this moment. And I don't think that ever goes away, right? But I think that being present, you know, some of that kind of fear of failure being present, for example, is also a good tension for me. Because if I manage to not kind of go totally in that direction in my mind, and I can actually still my mind and I can come back to what is rationally true, feeling that tension and then kind of turning that around into something that's positive that again drives me forward, that seems to be emotion and almost a kind of exchange of energy that is a net positive in my life.
Right. If otherwise you would get lazy and complacent and you would fail.
Exactly. For me, it's like, yeah, exactly. I mean, Steve Jobs said, stay hungry, stay foolish. So I'm not like, that's not 100% me, right? But like, I do think that kind of, you know, yin yang in life, we only know light because we only know dark. And like, if things were too easy for me, then one example would be that it doesn't kind of hit that criteria for me that things need to also be challenging. Right? And I don't want every single thing in my life to be challenging to the nth degree, but I definitely want enough kind of challenging things in my life, because that's when my brain fires. That's when I'm also at my best, is when things are sufficiently challenging at least.
So that's starting. That's how you've decided and worked this framework over like the years and the multiple times you've started. So on the flip side now, Addy, how have you made the decision to exit a business?
Oh, well, so, I mean, I think WooThemes was simpler in the sense that I wanted to challenge myself doing something new. And Magnus and Mark at that stage had different kind of ideas about where to take the business. And I didn't feel like within the business, at least, that I could challenge myself much further. So I decided to exit at that stage. It made sense for me to financially to exit at that stage. And I could kind of pursue this thing that was most important to me at that stage, which was having this new challenge. So to some extent, that was simpler. With Convergio, I think it was a multitude of things. So, I mean, I've mentioned kind of laying off people, mentioned having to take that screw to every single screw in the business. And that probably happened about midway through Convergio's journey. And I think beyond that kind of those harder times, what it ultimately came down to me, John, was Convergio or email marketing, at least, didn't feel like my life's work. So I knew like that, plus the fact that we were operating a really congested market, kind of, marketing software in general is a really tough space to operate in. Like those two things made me at least consider kind of selling. I was not that sentimentally attached to the idea or the business. I was, however, very, very attached to my team that I built there, which made it much harder to exit the business. And I guess the second part of that is that a lot of my family's wealth ultimately ended up kind of getting stuck in Convergio, even post WooThemes, because, every kind of founder, I think, with a little bit of cash, and I was still young, very young, after my WooThemes exit, like, I subscribed to this idea of throwing a few checks around as an angel investor and realizing that that's probably not what I should be doing, right? So made a few kind of bad bets there that have not paid off and are very unlikely to pay off at this stage. So a lot of that kind of our financial independence got tied up into Convergio. And I think that, alongside the fact that we'd been through hard times and the fact that I didn't think like this was my life's work, made sense to sell the business. And then kind of admittedly, we ran a process, got multiple kind of acquirers involved, and I managed to sell the business for a life-changing sum of money.
Congratulations, and impressive. Which then now leads to, so there's the new business, Cogsy, but there's also a 15 or so or 16 month project that is coming to fruition as of tomorrow, as we're recording this, or yesterday, if you're listening to this when it goes live. This is Life Profitability, your brand new book, right? The Measure of Entrepreneurial Success. I'm assuming you didn't use the same framework that made you decide to take on this project, but what was the reasoning behind spending the last year and a half with this project?
So no, you're right. Didn't use the same framework, but probably not dissimilar thinking. So I guess the precursor to the book, John, was that many of the ideas that are present in the book around life profitability are ideas that I think came to my awareness as we were building Convergio, and that's kind of things that happened in the team. And very much starting to kind of rethink what a kinder business, a friendlier business would actually look like. And back then, my team and I stumbled onto kind of one of our exercises. We normally did these on our team retreats when we got together because we were a fully remote team, where we would kind of relook at our kind of culture, our kind of values, and our mission statement. And we eventually, probably about halfway through the journey, we landed on kind of articulating our mission partly as follows, which said that we want to do profitable, stimulating, challenging work, but we recognize that kind of the most meaningful experiences that we can have are probably with people not on this team and probably outside of work. And in that, like, that was the first time where I had this little aha moment, which was, listen, you're like, I do not think we live to work. And if I run my team in that manner, then I'm not serving them and I'm not serving myself. And I subsequently kind of embarked down this path of, like, even within Convergio, and I probably wrote about 35 to 40,000 words. The ultimate book ended up being 60,000 words. But I wrote that kind of pre-acquisition because I was really passionate about getting some of these ideas out into the wild. And I think, like, even then, like, even the term life profitability was just crystallizing. And then after acquisition, I had a little bit more time, more than a sense of, like, this was not my baby anymore. It had a new kind of, it had new parents, right? So I could step away, at least mentally and emotionally, from the business a little bit. And I also had a bit of capital, so I could put it towards putting a publishing team together that could then help me kind of get these ideas of life profitability out into the wild, which is ultimately kind of the biggest goal that I have with the project, which is very different to how I would evaluate a business. It very much is kind of, how can I make sure that this is a sustainable vehicle, but really to get these ideas into as many people's hands as possible.
And so life profitability as not as a project, but as like a mindset shift or as a philosophy, is life profitability in its essence, is it for entrepreneurs who have made that life-changing exit already, or is it for people at any stage?
Yeah, so it's definitely for people at any stage, John. And I think many of the principles also applies to just if you're on any professional kind of career path as well. It's just definitely not limited to, you know, entrepreneurs, even though that is our primary reader, right? And in setting out kind of the goals and customer personas or reader personas for the book, that is our primary reader here is an entrepreneur. But as I said, I think the ideas applies to anyone. And I think at the core of that, and the reason I say that is that, and I'll probably take a step back in the sense that throughout kind of both businesses that I have been successful with, there were kind of big, you know, or significant times along that journey where I was either just angry all the time or discontent, where I was kind of literally kind of where my life would be teetering on an edge, right? Where I'd convinced myself at one stage that kind of nothing I had was that important anymore. I can just throw all of it in the trash and I can start afresh. And that wasn't a good place to be. And I think for me, at least, is part of that was I had this very narrow view of my ambition, of my drive, of these goals that I set myself, and feeling like I just can't get ahead. Like the to-do list is never ending. And even if I could, you know, finish this, there's just more stuff there. Or if I feed this beast called ambition, like the beast just gets bigger, right? And it just blows kind of more fire down my neck. And that wasn't helpful. And I think the people, early readers that I've, you know, spoken to, like many of them share a similar kind of experience, different words, but similar experience. And with life profitability, what I really wanted to do was ultimately, I don't think capitalism in its current form is wrong at all. In fact, I think it's kind of a contributor to many of the good things we have in life, but I also think it's flawed. And one of the ways in which simple ways in which I think it's flawed is I don't think we should be building businesses that are merely kind of, you know, financially profitable. I think we should think through a different lens, which is how do I build a business that kind of profits my whole life, where kind of this business doesn't just throw off money, but it can also like hit, you know, check, you know, a whole bunch of other boxes, because those other boxes are crucially important as well.
How does this differ from quote unquote, just having a work-life balance?
Yeah. So, I mean, work-life balance is one of the things that I personally don't believe in. I think it's flawed because in proposing that work and life can hold each other in balance, we're essentially saying these are two totally independent, separate things. Thus, they can be on opposite ends of a spectrum. Hence, they can be in balance in some way. And I actually think that kind of the biggest kind of mindset change there should be that work is just part of life, which proposes that if you want balance in your life, like your work should balance out other things that are important in your life, whether it's family, friends, your home life, whether it's your kind of, you know, personal health, physical, emotional, kind of mental health, whether it's hobbies or side projects, whether it's philanthropy, like there can be so many different things that should also be considered in that what I would call kind of life portfolio. And all of those things should be in balance. I don't think work and life, you know, should be and could be and even can be in balance to that extent.
Yeah. So this is one thing that I didn't expect from the book. And I mean, that's without, I guess, putting too much thought and just starting to read. And like with the name Life Profitability, I was thinking that this was sort of just like an offshoot of work-life balance. And it's not at all. It's like it's a shift away from thinking like that. There's one example that really, really hit me. And it's early on in the book, chapter one or two, but you give this example of a 30-minute coffee meeting. And to me, this is so contrary to how I think lots of us think and how lots of us are even told by other people on podcasts and blogs to think, which is like, don't always take that meeting. Like, stay focused with your to-do list, do what you need to do. And you have this example of this 30-minute meeting that you want to keep putting off because you're doing too many other things, but that you shouldn't. Can you explain this idea?
Yeah, because, and I think like, that's the thing, it's always the what if in my mind, right? Because every now and again, you do take that 30, you know, in a meeting, and it either turns into like a lovely kind of, you know, 2-3 hour lunch in the end, and you've met a new friend or you strengthened an existing relationship, or that meeting sparks just enough connection between two people that kind of subsequently there is some other benefit, whether in life or in business, that derives from that. And I think like that's almost the kind of the non-obvious part for me in all of this, John, is that saying that, because I agree, generally, I mean, we started just before recording and I told you my calendar is crazy right now. And I don't like it that way, right? So I tend to be the guy that does not kind of book that kind of 30-minute meeting. I also know that kind of when we talk about humans, so many kind of magical moments happen when we create some space to just do things, right? And just to be with other people, right? And share those moments with other people. And I think, like, again, if you're optimizing exclusively for kind of productivity or efficiency, then by all means, don't take the 30-minute coffee kind of meeting, right? It's not an efficient, you know, kind of use of your time. But like, there is a cost to that. And I think that's, like, for me, that cost aspect is the second part, and hence why I called the book Life Profitability, right? Is I think we often neglect the costs. There's often collateral damages. And in this coffee kind of your meeting example, the potential cost, and it's just a potential cost, it's just an opportunity cost, is just that that could have been a really, really good cup of coffee and a really good conversation that sparked something else that you didn't even know could exist. And but yet we don't do those things because we're so narrowly focused, so laser focused on just this one thing, just work, just ambition, just getting to unicorn status, whatever the case is, that we never do those things and we never discover kind of the you know, kind of magic and mystery that could be there on the other, you know, on that other side of the door if we just open it every now and again.
Yeah, I love it. I believe it ended in there. You said the life rewards us with unexpected dividends, which I love how you keep going with this like life portfolio throughout the book. And I love that because it's like you said, it's an unexpected, there's an opportunity cost, because I don't think you can ever be like, you can never get so efficient with your to-do list that some surprise opportunity is going to come from it. But having that coffee, that's where these things open up, or that call with somebody, whatever it happens to be, right? It's we don't know what's on the other side of those things, but we do know what's on the other side of productivity is just getting more work done.
Exactly right. So to that extent, it's very predictable, like staying on that kind of, you know, very kind of, you know, narrow path, like in working, like we can predict those things, but we're totally underserving these other parts of ourselves that are also important. And we're actually not even kind of underserving them. We're just sacrificing and compromising them along the way, often without even knowing, right? And I think like the kind of the most obvious places where people do this is like not sleeping well enough, you know, not exercising, you're eating kind of badly, all those things that we kind of those bad habits that we easily fall into when we're really kind of, you know, just busy, so busy at work, right? Don't have time to kind of, you know, cook a healthy meal, for example. So like for me, it's just about bringing that awareness around the costs of the decision we make. And I think, you know, Henry Thoreau, the philosopher, said it so beautifully, and I always butcher this, but it essentially comes down to this. And he says that the cost of anything we do in life is just life, right? It's our time, it's our attention. And for me, it's always a gut punch. Whenever I read it, it's a gut punch, because it essentially means that every single decision that I make every single day, like there's an opportunity cost to it. And if I get that wrong continuously, what I'm paying for, you know, for all those kind of wrong decisions is my life, right? And it sounds morbid, but we all have finite time in this universe, on this earth, as human beings. So being smart about the things, not even being smart, just being honest sometimes and aware about where we place our priorities, like the things we value, should probably kind of, well, will help us figure out like where to spend our time in a way that is then life profitable, that considers those costs, whether opportunity or actual life costs.
Yeah, the cost of anything we do in life is life. That really hits home when, I mean, you quoted Steve Jobs in the book and today. I mean, I don't think you could aim business-wise to do better than he did, yet his life was still ended tragically and quickly. And there was nothing he could do to change that, no matter how much success he had. Like, if that doesn't hit at home for you, I don't know what will.
Yeah. And to that point, right, John, I mean, I start the book where I tell the story of, you know, Paul Kalanithi, who was a world-acclaimed neurosurgeon. And the starting quote in the book, and again, butchering it, but he says he'd built potential for so long in his life, and now that potential will go unrealized. And what he's referring to is that he'd put off like two goals in his life that he kind of, that were really important to him as he was kind of progressing in his kind of professional career as a neurosurgeon, which was he always wanted to write a book and he always wanted to be a father. And what tragically happened was he was diagnosed with lung cancer at the age of 36, and he died a year later when his daughter was only 8 months old. And his wife had to finish his book, When Breath Becomes Air, by writing the last chapter, right? He didn't write the last chapter of his own book. And I think the key here is to acknowledge that, like, we always, as an entrepreneurs, we're trained. Like, there's such a strong narrative around this idea that just work hard for X many years, and then on the other side of the rainbow, there's going to be a pot of gold. And whilst I don't even think that that can ever be a guaranteed outcome, right? I'm not trying to discourage entrepreneurship. I just think we should acknowledge that more kind of business ventures fail than kind of those that succeed, right? So it's never even a guaranteed outcome. But crucially, we don't know how long it's going to take to get to that outcome, and we don't know how much time we have. And when we keep putting off the more important things in life, and I can't, like, again, like, maybe that's just my preference. I don't think, you know, work, success, those things are the most important thing in my life. And I don't mean to be a hypocrite. I've spent a big part of my life chasing those things. I just think that there's also more. Those things are important to me. There's also more. But when we constantly put off other important things in pursuit of those things on this very narrow path, I think that's the risk we run. We run the same risk that Paul, you know, kind of Kalaniti in the end encountered, which was he couldn't write the last chapter of his own book.
Right. I love it. I love it. And so this, and I've loved this conversation, Eddie, and the book is fantastic and I recommend it, and I'll get you to pitch it in a second. But I want to wrap up on this one final question, because you kind of pushed into it really well right there. So after like 6 years of interviewing people and hundreds of people, I've come up with this like entrepreneurial gap that seems to exist, which is kind of, I think it does relate to what you're talking about. So it's like you've been going through all this stuff and everything you want to do is, I mean, the book comes out tomorrow. You want it to be a success. You've now started another business. You want it to be a success. And we've talked about your successes. We've talked about some of your not such successes along the way. But I mean, it's your entire life and we haven't had time to talk about all of it. But the thing is that we're typically always looking forward to that next thing. And as soon as we're about to hit that goal, like your book comes out tomorrow, you're just going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future. But instead of doing that, I would love it if you could just like stop and turn around and look behind you, Addie, at this entire journey up until now. And rather than looking forward for this moment, could you just tell me, how do you feel about the entire journey up until today?
Oh, probably like the first two words that come to mind is I feel proud. I mean, I'd be kind of reluctant not to say that. I do feel proud, but just grateful. Like that was the kind of going from the literally in my mind, kind of, you're thinking pride and then kind of gratefulness. I think there's a lot that I can be grateful for in terms of timing, things that I kind of didn't time perfectly yet. The timing was perfect, right? But it wasn't through action of my own. Grateful for second chances where people that I've kind of wronged gave me second chances. You know, grateful for having a family and friends that have been truly supportive and kind of sat with my shit when I was going through kind of your tougher moments. And like, that's just a recurring theme, is there's so much there in that journey where I think to acknowledge that this wasn't just me. And yeah, it doesn't matter how, like all the kind of hard things I did, all the smart things I did, there were so many other things that, and other people that played such an incredible part in this journey that I'm just grateful for.
And proud of what you've accomplished up till now, as you very much should be. So Life Profitability, the new measure of entrepreneurial success. You said it's not just for entrepreneurs, but can you give like the elevator pitch that you've come up with up until now?
Yeah. So, I mean, whether it's in your business or just in your career, the kind of the perspective that I hope to kind of change and inspire here is to really think through, it doesn't matter where you are on that journey at this stage, but to just take a step back, realign with who you are as a person and really think through what those kind of most valuable things and you are in your life and the things you value, right? To thinking through those personal values. And then start kind of, you know, creating an environment in your life, in your business, in your career that hits more of those nodes over time. And life profitability really is about creating space, finding space, and then leveraging that space, and then giving you optionality to reinvest that, whether it's back into your business, back into your life, back into that new side project, or just kind of, you know, as I do on many Saturdays, like just sit on the couch and kind of be lazy for a couple of hours. But that's really that idea. And like along with that, there's many things that that I try and kind of give structure to, right? Whether it's habits to kind of helping you with that, whether it's helping you figure out how to define what your good enough is, right? So stop benchmarking. Like I think as individuals, we need to, very unique individuals, shall I add, we should stop thinking about benchmarking kind of ourselves and our achievements to others, especially those reports in the media, because there's such a kind of, you know, big bias that's all around, kind of your survivorship bias that's all skewed towards the extremely successful and not to the average. And even in me saying that, being on this podcast, there are probably many fascinating, magical human beings that, as per their, you know, by their own definition, probably have immensely life profitable kind of lives. Yet they are not here because they're not reports in the media. They didn't have some kind of outsized, you know, financial success. And that's a shame. So that's really why I put the book out there. I really want to broaden that definition of what it means to just be magically and truly you in your life. And especially if you're an entrepreneur in your business, and how you can also, by doing that for yourself in your business, like actually also do that for kind of the team members that you bring along on that journey.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it. I fully endorse the book. It's fantastic. And I think that anyone out there who's been intrigued at all by what Addie has said should take the time to sit down with this book, because I think it will change the way you think about like life profitability. And also it'll sort of get rid of this whole work-life balance thought that you have, like I had. So that was the profound part to me. And that to me is worth it. So the book should be, where should people go? Amazon?
Yeah. So the easiest place for most people will probably be Amazon. For this week, the Kindle version is available for 99 cents or whatever your exact currency is. Might be slightly different in some geographies, but it is on special and on sale this week. So Amazon is probably the easiest way to go. There are, however, like most, like kind of not traditional, but most reputable, like online and physical retailers would probably stock the book. If you don't go to Amazon, the easiest place to find some of those links, at least, is on my personal website, which is addii.me.
So I'll link to Addie's site there, as well as I'll find the Amazon link for you, but you can just type it into Amazon. And if you're listening during this launch week, then you can get the book for Kindle for 99 cents or a hardcover for some other price, I'm sure.
that is true. Yes, there is a paperback, and it is some other price.
Exactly. We don't know. It'll change. I mean, depending on where you are. So, Addie, thank you so much, man. After 5 years and having you back on, it has been my absolute pleasure. I've loved how open and honest you've been throughout this conversation. I wish you the best of luck in the launch of the new book, and just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is truly awesome to watch.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, John. And thanks so much for the kind words and the encouragement.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. As I said to Addie on the show, it's always great to have a guest back on the show years and years later to see what they've been up to. So was fun. And I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I did. Make sure, if you need website hosting, WordPress hosting, or even WooCommerce hosting from what Addie created, make sure to check out Nexus. It is an absolutely just badass hosting service that I spent over 6 months searching for, trying out every different hosting service company we could find, and then finally moving Hack the Entrepreneur itself, and then like six of our other sites over to Nexus. And we've been absolutely nothing but happy. And they're offering to give you 60% off right now. So hacktheentrepreneur.com/Nexus, NEXCESS. You can get it there, or head over to hacktheentrepreneur.com and check out the blog. You'll see our most recent article. It is all about why and how we switched over to Nexus. All right. It's been a blast. Thank you so much once again for stopping by. I truly, truly, truly appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.